Hey, good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. No, we haven't floated away yet, although there are scenes from Atlanta in the suburbs that appear to be from the devastation in Mississippi Gulf Coast a couple of years ago of Hurricane Katrina. I'm serious. We've had about six, seven people be swept away here with the floodwaters. It's very strange. In the almost 40 years I've been here, I've never seen this kind of rain, this kind of weather. If you saw your evening news tonight, network news, or the cable channels, you probably saw coverage of it. It's really bad. Last week, there were several nights when we were on the air where it was touch and go whether or not we were going to be able to stay on there, because some of these storms have really been violent. I mention all this simply because, I mean, everybody gets bad weather at some point. It's highly unusual for Atlanta to get 20 inches of rain in about 5 days. It's just unheard of. But I think it's another example of the non-global weather change that's going on. Of course, it's not going on. It's not. And any talk to the contrary is simply some sort of a liberal plot to destroy the coal industry. Or something. What is the latest BS about that, huh? Destroy the coal industry, or raise the price of gasoline, or take your cigarettes away. I'm not sure which, but it is occurring. It's occurring in real time. This global climate change thing is occurring in real time. You can watch it anytime you choose to by paying attention. At the same time, this has been going on here in Atlanta. I read something, I think the first of last week, that the so-called Northeast Passage from where? The Kamchatka Peninsula, I believe, in Russia. One can now sail north from there and get over to to Europe. Is that right? Oh, Jesus. And then the, I think it was on one of the science channels this weekend, I saw something about, what was it that I saw? Damn it. Oh, about Arctic ice is just, or no, it was Greenland. That's right, Greenland, whose glaciers and ice shelves are 60, 70, 80,000 years old. Now, I realize that's an impossibility. Nothing on Earth is older than 7,000 max, according to the fundamentalists. But assuming that this is not one of Satan's dirty tricks, you know, that really the ice is 60, 70,000 years old. It is melting at an alarming rate. And the net effect of that, of course, is going to be the rise in sea level around the globe. Why am I talking about this? This is nonsense. Nobody, you know, nobody cares about this. Nobody wants to hear about this kind of stuff. Okay. So, no, the reason I say that is because anyone who is concerned about global climate change already has all the information he or she needs. And that would be, I would assume, most people who listen to this program. Since your thought processes are science-based and not fantasy or superstition-based, unlike the people who listen to Beck and Limbaugh and the rest of them or watch Fox Channel, since you are science-based, you already understand the implications of global climate change, that it is occurring, what it means. The only thing that is that you and I have not had in our equation is how quickly it's occurring. See, this is where those damned old scientists always get it wrong, don't they? Full of bastards. They told us the end of the century. Now it looks like the middle of the century, and probably by 2020, once all the numbers are in about this disastrous effect of just filling the atmosphere with carbon dioxide. Oh, well, as is it Michelle Bachmann, who says carbon dioxide is a harmless gas. Don't worry about it. Plants absorb it. Michelle, they're cutting down all the... Oh, never mind. Another one of those stories that I saw over the weekend that are further proof that right-wingers and Republicans, who are pretty much the same, are crazy, just crazy. Michael Schwartz, who's Tom Coburn's, Senator Tom Coburn's chief of staff. He's the Republican crazy man from Oklahoma. Michael Schwartz has an interesting theory. He was at the Values Voter Conference, you know, this assemblage of right-wing nutballs in, I guess it was in D.C. again this year, that occurs every year, where these people get together for one great big circle jerk, and they have all their guest speakers and so on and so forth. And the guest speakers are getting more and more fringy, although the Republican Party's leadership, you can't any longer say is on the fringe. It's mainstream for Republicans. They're all crazy, just absolutely rug-chewing crazy. Well, this guy, Michael Schwartz, attempted to explain his interesting theory. If you tell little boys that looking at pornography will make them gay, they won't want a copy of Playboy. Jesus Christ. I don't believe it either, but it actually happened. Michael Schwartz attempted to explain this during a pep talk on the so-called new masculinity. The new masculinity, what would that be? Is that where you are more prone to beat your wife and your children even quicker than you normally do? Or, you know, what is new masculinity? I have no idea. But anyway, he gave this little seminar or speech at the Values Voter Conference last week. It's not values. It's not a voter conference. It's a bunch of neo-Nazis sitting around talking about the crazy infidel Barack Obama. So I'm not going to call it Values Voter Conference. It's a right-wing. It was another Klan meeting. Jesus Christ, that's all it was. Anyway, according to Think Progress, during his presentation, Michael Schwartz, chief of staff to Senator Tom Coburn, Republican of Oklahoma, Schwartz asserted that all the pre-adolescent boys he's been associated with, think about that for a second, okay? I'm not sure who he's talking about. Is he talking about his own children, or does he have neighborhood meetings? Does he hang out at the Y? I'm not sure what he means there. But he says that all the pre-adolescent boys he has been associated with, quote, speak badly, end quote, about homosexuality, which he implied to be somehow positive, that these young boys, pre-adolescent. Now, think about this. Pre-adolescent boys are speaking badly in Michael Schwartz's world about homosexuality. Really? Is that right, Michael? Son of a bitch. Can you imagine? I wonder where they got the impression about homosexuality or heterosexuality or bisexuality or non-sexuality being either good, bad, indifferent. I wonder where they got that. Anyway, Schwartz added that a friend of his once claimed that all pornography is homosexual. Yeah, all pornography is homosexual because it turns one's sexual urges, quote, inwards, end quote. Inwards. Schwartz told the crowd at the right-wing convocation about Jim Johnson. That's his name, a friend of his who turned an old hotel into a hospice for gay men dying of AIDS. Yeah, one of Schwartz's friends. Schwartz told the Nazis, quote, one of the things he said to me that I think is an astonishingly insightful remark, he said, quote, all pornography is homosexual pornography because all pornography turns your sexual drive inwards, end quote, end quote. There were murmurs and gasps from the crowds of Nazis at the conference in D.C. last week. Schwartz went on, now think about that. And if you tell an 11-year-old boy about that, do you think he's going to want to get a copy of Playboy? I'm pretty sure he'll lose interest. That's the last thing he wants. You know, that's a good comment. It's a good point. And it's a good thing to teach young people, end quote. I'm not sure I understand what the hell this guy is talking about. Somebody who ran an AIDS hospice organization had a friend, or was he the friend, who said, Michael, all pornography is gay pornography, and tell young boys about that, and they won't turn queer. Jesus God.
Where the boys are somewhere.
Malloy program is brought to you by It's Up to Us Alone, featuring Ed Asner. Go to usalone.com for info on where to hear the debut of this dramatic new radio play in your area. It's about 22 past the hour. So, Oklahoma Republican Senator Tom Coburn has this really weird chief of staff, this guy named Michael Schwartz, who was at the neo-Nazi convention in Washington last weekend. Was it last week? Where all the right-wing Republicans get together and play with each other. That was the one where, was it last year, where Limbaugh showed up and he was bouncing around with all his body fat? Remember that? And his black disco outfit. Man, yeah, he's skinny now. He's lost a bunch of weight. That means one thing. He's back on the OxyContin. I wonder what's going to happen when they bust him this time. He got rid of his hearing with the last go-around drugs. Maybe this time he'll go blind? I don't know. Well, it's your body, Rush. Have fun. Anyway, this guy, Michael Schwartz, addressing the right-wingers at this conference last week, in a pep talk on what he calls new masculinity, said that all pornography is homosexual, and therefore the way to stop your sons from looking at pornography, interesting, it didn't talk about the daughters, but the way to stop the sons is just to tell them they'll turn queer if they read Playboy. He says that's the last thing pre-adolescent boys want, and it's a good comment to tell them they'll turn queer, and it's a good thing to teach young people. Or he could be like, James Dobson, the guy from the, what's that organization? Focus on the Family. He says, if you don't want your sons to be queer, then dad, take him into the shower together and stand there with your great big old wiener and let your little boy see that. It'll just freak him out so much he'll never want to experience that in his life. Oh my God, these people are sick. They're out of their minds. I've never heard anything like this. No matter what a Republican or a right-winger, no matter what area of social science or any science, for that matter, human relations, interactions, anything, they're screwed on everything. Have you ever noticed that? Everything. There's now, is there one area of right-wing thinking that you would indulge in to any degree or allow your children to come within two blocks of? Huh? Anyway, Michael Schwartz, Tom Coburn's chief of staff, according to Think Progress, is no stranger to extreme rhetoric about the gay community. A couple of years ago, he denounced the Supreme Court for giving Americans what he called the right to commit buggery. Now, if you remember what that ruling was about, is that the state had no business interfering in relationships, whether they're gay or straight. The court says nobody's goddamn business. You know, a couple of people want to get together and mess around. Adults in the privacy of their own places, where is there compelling interest on the part of the public or law enforcement to get involved in that? That's what the Supreme Court ruled in basically the same ruling in Roe v. Wade, that there is there is a zone of privacy around what adults do with other adults or decisions adults make. There's a zone of privacy. Now, did Jefferson and Adams and Jackson, or not Jackson, Jefferson and Adams, or all these people who signed the Declaration, I'm sorry, who put together the Constitution, did they say, we believe there should be a zone of privacy around hetero-homo acts or whether or not a woman wants to terminate a pregnancy or do something with her own body? Did they say that? No, of course they didn't. Of course they didn't. And that's the point that Michael Schwartz and these right-wing Nazis jump on. It's not in the Constitution. Anyway, he denounced a couple of years ago the Supreme Court for giving Americans what he called the right to commit buggery. God, these guys get hung up on sex, don't they? On homosexual sex, heterosexual sex, they get hung up on it. Oh, my God. Later, in an interview, he told Max Blumenthal, the guy who has out the book Republican Gomorrah, which is a must-read for anyone who wants to understand the debauchery that the Republican Party has fallen into. He told Max Blumenthal, quote, "I'm a radical. I'm a real extremist. I don't want to impeach judges. I want to impale them. You know, stick a sword through their bodies or something. Aren't these people nice? And some of you dumb sons of bitches on the right who listen to this program had the gall to suggest that I, or to claim that I said that I want to see Glenn Beck kill himself. I said if and when he does, do it on television, Glenn. And of course, I still am waiting for that. In 1987, Schwartz co-wrote Gay, AIDS, and You, a pamphlet which, according to Blumenthal, alleged that the gay community was, quote, using the AIDS crisis to pursue their political agenda. In 1987, remember 1987? 22 years ago? People were dying. People were dropping like flies, and nobody really knew why. This disease, AIDS. Do anybody remember that? I remember telling my then young daughters who were in their late teens, educate yourself about AIDS. If you're going to have sex, for God's sake, use a condom. We don't know what this is. We have no idea. Well, Michael Schwartz knew what it was. The AIDS crisis was what the queers were using to pursue a political agenda. You sick son of a bitch.
Chalk to mark the outline where the boy first drops. Beware the Holy Trinity, church and state and law. For every death the virus gets more deadly than before. Homophobia, the worst disease. Give it to me anyway.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
Enough is enough. 25 before the hour. Michael Schwartz, of course, is the is the guy who Max Blumenthal quotes considerably in Republican Gomorrah. He is also the founder of the Washington D.C. chapter of Operation Rescue. And he is also, I quoted this for you last week, Jude had sent it to me, Eric Fromm's book, The Anatomy of Human Destructiveness. In that book, it talks about what Fromm called the necrophilous character. It is the desire to destroy anything and everything, to devour it, to render it lifeless. And this is what the Republicans in general are doing. And certain standouts in that movement are people like Michael Schwartz. Oh God! Now, as far as his claim about the new masculinity. Michael in Roswell writes, new masculinity? That's using bread tongs to hold your own penis while you urinate because only gay guys want to touch a penis. Oh, my God. We have some very weird listeners, too. No, I certainly get that, Michael. Oh, my God. Don't touch a penis, it'll make you queer. Jesus. They're just nuts. They're just wacko. And it would just be monumentally funny, except they want to kill you and they want to kill me. They want to destroy everything. They really do. They want to destroy the entire planet. They want to kill everything. I don't know. That has something to do with the Book of Revelation and, their cloud being slipping and sliding down to earth on a pile of bloody corpses to celebrate something. I don't know. Oh, well. There is a battle coming in the Congress over, remember the USA Patriot Act? Remember that? The legislation that, in effect, ended participatory democracy in this country, legally. I mean, the Supreme Court tried to end it with the 2000 decision to give the presidency to George W. Bush, because to count the votes, if you remember, they ruled that if the votes were counted in Florida, it would injure George W. Bush's claim of being president. So the Supreme Court ruling on, December 12th, 2000, if you want to date the end of the grand experiment in this country that was started a couple hundred years ago, you can use that as the terminus point, December 12th, 2000. Or was it December 8th? No, I think it was December, one of those 2 days anyway. Well, and if you want to note the attempt to turn the country into a police state, then it would be the passage of the USA Patriot Act that followed closely on the heels of the Bush-engineered attack on this country of September 11th, 2001. The USA Patriot Act, so-called, misnamed, just an absolute, disgusting, contemptible misuse of language, in keeping with Orwell's Dictionary of Newspeak, when that passed, it gutted the Constitution, absolutely destroyed it. In fact, rendered it almost meaningless. Now, the U.S. Congress is preparing to consider extending what are referred to as crucial provisions in the USA Patriot Act. And since those that review is coming up, civil liberties groups and some Democratic lawmakers are trying to get organized to change some of the USA Patriot Act. You notice in all the reports, you don't see anything about Republicans trying to change this. But Republicans are cowardly sons of bitches. All Republicans are. And Republican lawmakers are incipient Nazis. We know this. This is as true as, the law of gravity. Oh, no, wait a minute. It's the theory of gravity, isn't it? Or is it the law? No, I think it's just the theory of gravity. Therefore, it's probably inoperable to some of these people. But anyway, both the House and the Senate are set to hold committee hearings this week on whether to reauthorize three sections of the Patriot Act that expire at the end of this year. Huh? At the end of this year, they're running out. The provisions originally passed expanded the power of the FBI to seize records, expanded the power of the FBI to eavesdrop on phone calls in the course of a counterterrorism investigation. Everything is a counterterrorism investigation now. Have you noticed that? Everything. Anyway, a group of senators who support greater privacy protections filed a bill last Thursday that would impose new safeguards on the Patriot Act while tightening restrictions on other surveillance policies. The measure is co-sponsored. These senators are, it's nine Democrats and one independent. No Republicans. Republicans don't do anything except scream stuff at joint sessions of Congress and try to figure out ways to screw their constituents even more by using tactics like, well, if you don't reelect me, they're going to come and kill your baby. If you don't reelect me, they're going to send your grandma to a death panel. If you don't reelect me, Barack Obama is going to reveal that he really is a Muslim from Kenya and he's going to eat your husband. Jesus Christ, these people are sick. Big story today and for the coming weeks is the trick bag that General McChrystal, is that it? What's his first name? General McChrystal, the one who's in charge. I've got it right here. Don't email it to me. Stanley McChrystal has one of his people leaked to the Washington Post this so-called confidential report that he wrote assessing the situation in Afghanistan. And in the report, McChrystal is asking for tens of thousands more human beings, American human beings, to destroy as General McChrystal plays warlord. And this puts Barack Obama in kind of a weird position. Obama, ostensibly hasn't decided yet what his Afghanistan policy is supposed to be. Where it concerns maintaining the status quo, increasing the number of dead and dying and wounded, or just pulling out, just coming home, and recognizing the historical impossibility of subduing Afghanistan. Why do you and I know that? You know, I asked this months ago. Why can you and I read history and look at that part of the world and say to ourselves, wow, man, nobody's ever been able to dominate Afghanistan. It's a tribal society run by religious extremists. Thus it is, thus it always has been, thus it always will be. And some of the more powerful figures in global history had to find that out the hard way. Why can't we take a look at those historical examples and say, we don't want to be there? You know, it just puzzles the hell out of me. I mean, you and I are not, I don't know, maybe some of you are, but for the most part, people listening to this program are not geostrategic experts. I mean, we don't have degrees, do we, in international relations or political science? All right, some of you may, but I mean with a focus on that part of the world, the what do they call it? Not the Middle East, but the Far East. No, not the Far East. Whatever the hell that part of the world is called. Central Asia. How's that? We don't have degrees in that. We just have read. You and I have read. We have looked at history, going all the way back to high school history. We read about Alexander the Great. We read about the British Empire in the 18th century as it worked its way into Afghanistan and then was bloodied and defeated. Alexander the Great, it was strategic withdrawal. No, it wasn't. He was defeated. His ass was kicked out. You can even make the argument that the Mongol hordes under Genghis Khan were defeated and kicked out. The Soviet Union certainly was defeated and kicked out. As a matter of fact, it wasn't Ronald Reagan, but it was the horror of the Afghanistan war that actually defeated and brought about the breakup of the Soviet Union. So why can't you and I get that word to our leaders and say, hey, hello, look over here. Hey, see my hands up. Hey, world leader, American leader, General McChrystal, President Obama. I know. I've got the answer. Get out! Raus mit du! Or something like that. Why can't they listen to us? Or better yet, since Barack Obama, the President of the United States, is a student of history, why can't he look at the history and say, you know, this is worse than Vietnam? We'll be back.
It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Where was I? Oh, well, talking about Afghanistan. We're going to get to that next segment. But the reason this came up, today was a day of mourning in Italy for 6 soldiers who were killed all at once in a suicide bombing in Afghanistan last week. It was Italy's biggest single loss in the war, and it has furthered a debate in that country on Italy's participation in this multinational force in Afghanistan. Now, it's called a multinational force, but come on, let's get real. I think the Italians have about 3,000 troops there. And according to reports, the deaths of these soldiers unleashed an outpouring of emotion in a country where the whole mission in Afghanistan is increasingly unpopular. Well, what about this country? It's increasingly unpopular. What's the latest poll? I know it was more than 50% of Americans have stated one way or another. I hate these wishy-washy questions that the pollsters put out, but I believe that a majority of Americans want us the hell out of there. This is crazy. It seems like we can't exist as a country unless we're at war with somebody. Have you noticed that? What would it be like in this country to go a decade or two without being involved in any kind of military conflict anywhere on earth? Now, that's an impossibility because of the nature of who we are. We are a country that is strictly about predatory capitalism, and predatory capitalism devours anything that it can devour and maims and wounds and injures anything that it doesn't devour. And if we have a military presence in 140 or 150 or 160 countries, whatever the number is, then it's impossible for us not to be in conflict with somebody somewhere all the time. This is really sick stuff, isn't it? Really sick stuff. Anyway, a poll taken before the attack that killed these six Italians showed that 55% of Italians oppose their troops being there. And after the bombing, Umberto Bossi, who is the leader of the Northern League, which is arguably the most influential member of the ruling coalition. By the way, if memory serves me, the Northern League is really a neo-fascist political organization that is part of Berlusconi's coalition government. Anyway, the Northern League called for a speedy pullout. Somebody will correct me if I'm wrong there, but I think the Northern League is neo-fascist. Anyway, the leader of that organization, Umberto Bossi, said the problem is that it seems impossible to export democracy. I hope that our boys will be home by Christmas, quote unquote. Now, the Italian Prime Minister Berlusconi said Italy is not going to withdraw its troops, but he suggested a change in Allied strategy. He's quoted as saying, "It's now time to meet with our allies to draft a transition strategy and a program that would help the Karzai government to gradually take responsibility for the country's security and allow the allies to reduce their troop numbers in Afghanistan," end quote. This is madness. You know, while the playboy fascist Berlusconi, who is really, really, I mean, just a train wreck, that guy, while he's talking about that, Stanley McChrystal, our boy, is saying, no, I'm going to need tens of thousands of more killers over here, boys and girls to come over and kill or be killed. But that's the way I want to play the game. I'm Stanley McChrystal, and I'm the supreme ally commander over here. I control the American troops and NATO troops. And rather than declare this an unwinnable situation, and what the hell constitutes winning in Afghanistan anyway? Well, somebody, anybody, please tell me what that is. I'm serious. I don't care if you're if you're a right-wing Beck sucker. I mean, if you have a definition of winning in Afghanistan, email it to me. Oh, wait a minute. You can't write. That's right. Never mind. Skip it. But if you're a normal person, what constitutes a victory for the United States in Afghanistan? I mean, they're already building the pipeline, aren't they? They, being this consortium of American construction and oil companies, plus a few British oil companies, aren't they? I mean, isn't that being built to get the gas and oil out of the Central Asian, the Caspian Sea region, and into across Afghanistan and into Pakistan, and then to those tankers that'll be lined up in the Indian Ocean waiting to, No, that's not okay. Anyway, the Italian public, you see, has been told that Italian troops went to Afghanistan in 2002 not to fight a war, but on a peacekeeping mission. That's what they were told. Sound familiar? Sure. And now they're coming out of the ether 7 years later, and they're going, un momento. Yeah, un momento. You're damn right, un momento. What's going on? Why, you know, these NATO forces especially. What is the North Atlantic Treaty Organization about? Wasn't that a force put together that would stop the Soviet Union from thundering across the plains of Germany to attack Europe post-World War II? I mean, what is NATO doing in Afghanistan? Oh, well. Now, according to what I have here, it's not just Italy. Debate in Germany is going on, too. Germany has 4,000 troops in Afghanistan. And the mission became even more unpopular after a German-ordered airstrike earlier this month in the northern province of Kunduz, in which civilians were murdered. And I don't know. The rest of the world is saying, wait a second. You know, we really don't want to have our sons, for the most part, our sons coming home in boxes, dead, or our daughters. This is insane. We need to get out of there, right? All right, more on this when we come back, because it's going to be what the right wing is going to use to further destabilize the Obama administration. I'm going to explain that when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Has your computer been...
Seven past the hour. This is the Malloy program. We're talking about Afghanistan, mainly because that issue is going to be another. It's coming as surely as teabaggers and birthers and deathers and the rest of these goddamn freaks exist out here on the political landscape. This is the next one. It'll be Obama catching the usual kind of garbage and flack from the right-wing crazy people that dominate media in this country. And they'll probably have rallies to increase the number of troops in Afghanistan, American troops, because General Stanley McChrystal, who's the supreme commander there, has made sure that the report that he put together, a confidential report for the president, has been leaked to the Washington Post, and now it's all over the place, where Crystal is demanding up to 40,000 more troops. And that's just for openers. You know it as well as I do. Now, as far as winning in Afghanistan, Bruce writes, we could win over the hearts and minds in Afghanistan by sending in a half dozen construction battalions and rebuilding the irrigation system the Soviets destroyed. In every field interview, that's what the Marines always say when asked, what do the people want? And the Marines can't do that for them. Those battalions are tied down in Iraq, clearing mines and guarding convoys. Afghanistan used to be the major food exporter in the region, but without irrigation water, the only crop they can grow that will mature before the dry season is poppies. They need the money to buy food. So, yeah, if we were interested, truly interested in the hearts and minds of the Afghan people, if we were truly interested in democracy, which is insane to begin with. If the Afghan people want a democracy, don't you think that there might be the slightest indication inside the country that that was the case? Has there ever been a moment where the Afghan people have gotten word out to the world at large, hey, we're being oppressed over here, we would like to have democracy? Has there been? Or is this another one of those instances where the arrogance of the United States the dripping, stinking arrogance of the United States is so monumental that it gives itself permission to invade another country and impose our form of government. What would happen if a country invaded us to impose tribal law rather than democratic law, which we used to have in this country? We don't anymore. But, you know, the form of government that we had for a while, supposing a foreign power decided to come here and say, well, you know, we're going to impose tribal, a tribal structure on you where your country will be subdivided into, individual fiefdoms run by warlords, and you will have these tribal councils. Oh, by the way, we understand you have a lot of coal in the United States. Not that we're there to get your coal, although we need coal in order to do things over here in Berserkistan. But you see, I mean, it's madness, and I don't have to give you a third grade example like that. You've already figured it out. But I'm just hoping that the right wing asses that are listening to this program will sit there and pull their fingers out of their nose. Stop picking boogers for just a second, you guys, and realize what's going on. It's your sons that are going to go there and fight because you were too stupid to tell your sons and, in some instances, your daughters, no, you're not going to support corporate America. You're not going to do it. If you want to support corporate America, stay here and get a job. You're not going to go over to Afghanistan and kill or be killed or come back all riddled and eaten up with PTSD. But go back to picking your boogers. Never mind. I didn't mean to wake you up. In addition to all of this, there is a study, a recent study conducted at Stanford University, found that the rates of post-traumatic stress disorder among service members deployed in Iraq and Afghanistan may be as high as more than 1 in 3 of all the people we've sent on these repeated deployments. 2 million troops deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan over the past 8 years, 9 years. 2 million troops. So that means that we can expect an astounding 700,000 veterans who will come home suffering from PTSD. Now, our military affairs correspondent sent this to us, Sharon, and it says the numbers are double previously projected numbers because, unlike other projections, this study, the one done by Stanford University, factors in delayed onset of PTSD, which is common. Now, Department of Defense claims that the transition to VA services, Veterans Administration services, is a seamless one for veterans. And I like this line, but evidence shows otherwise. Yeah, evidence shows otherwise. How many times do you occasionally, you don't hear it so much anymore, because apparently word has gone out to the networks, don't tell people how hard it is for veterans. Don't do that. Damn it. You'll cut into the flow of people who are joining the military to go get more PTSD. Don't report on that. But everybody knows that it is not a seamless transition from multiple deployments to a war zone. And one comes home either physically or mentally or emotionally or all three wounded and trying to get services. Now, if you can get the services, yeah, the Veterans Administration is government-run medical care. That's precisely what it is. That's government-run medical care. The doctors are military people. The nurses are military people. If you can get in, sure, you'll get good service. But getting in, you see, because the military, in the first place, the military doesn't want to recognize what in World War II was called shell shock. They don't want to recognize when in Vietnam was called the 1,000-yard stare. They don't want to recognize what now is called post-traumatic stress disorder. Because to do so, to recognize it, well, that's not what war is all about. War is mom and apple pie and helping the little children, in this case in Afghanistan, to fly kites and the women to break out of their burqas and wear bikinis if they want to. That's what war is all about. It's not about this other stuff. It's not about death and destruction and blood and gore and vomit and urine and guts on the road and coming home and being insane and mad and crazed and devouring your own family. No, it's not about that. It's not about that. It's about glory, glory, hallelujah. His truth is marching on and so on and so on and so on and so on. Department of Defense claims that the transition to VA services is a seamless one for veterans but evidence shows otherwise. Both Department of Defense and the VA lack a sufficient number of mental health professionals, either on a contract basis or on staff, to diagnose, treat, and provide compensation to patients with PTSD. We know that. You know that. I know that. Everybody knows that. Why do we pretend? What is that? Denial? Yeah, that's all it is. The report goes on to say delays in treatment and disability compensation leads to high rates of unemployment, homelessness, family dissolution, incarceration, and substance abuse. Mm-hmm. And then it says, in the worst of outcomes, veterans with mental illness and PTSD are nine times more likely to commit suicide than those who do not suffer from a form of mental illness, depression, or PTSD. Nine times more likely to commit suicide. Now, committing suicide saves the VA and the Department of Defense and the military a lot of embarrassment. You know, there's that, he killed himself. Oh, damn, really? Oh, well, we thought we turned him into a Marine or a soldier or whatever. He killed himself. Well, it must have been a character flaw. But that eliminates the problem for the Department of Defense and the VA, because now the soldier is gone. He's no longer around to wind up like Timothy McVeigh or to become a drag or a drain on the Treasury by insisting on a certain number of Valiums or whatever, or maybe a therapist, or maybe some place where he can just go and scream. You see, that takes money. You got to have facilities. You got to have staff to run the facilities, right? So the ones that kill themselves, oh, well, we're very sorry to hear that. We'll give him a nice military send-off. We really are, but, you know, after the coffin is lowered and everybody goes home, you can just see the military authorities thinking or sitting around having a beer saying, Jesus Christ, what's another one going? One less crazy person we have to deal with. My.
The Black Falcon or the Little Sparrow, the healing light or the flash of the barrel.
The primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. And Sharon, our military affairs correspondent, sends me a email along with the stuff she sent in tonight. And among other things, she says, Secretary of Defense Bob Gates has been trying to shame NATO into sending more troops for the last 3 years. If you were NATO, would you send more troops to Afghanistan? We wasted resources and mismanaged that war, and now we want NATO to bail us out. If we send more troops to Afghanistan, our military personnel will continue to have to do repeated long tours in the Middle East. The post-traumatic stress and suicides will continue. Our military families will have to suffer in ways the rest of us cannot even imagine. And the incredible unfairness of this, which I do believe, but I'm a conspiracy nut, I do believe it's planned, wreck the economy, have a lot of young people who can't find a job, and all of a sudden your military recruitment goals are met with no problem. What if we had a draft? Shouldn't we have a universal draft? Shouldn't that, I mean, as long as we're going to be a militaristic, as long as we're going to have troops in 140, 50, 60, whatever it is, countries, shouldn't it be a shared responsibility? Not responsibility. Shouldn't it be shared blood and tears and guts and pain and suffering and family horror. Shouldn't that be there for everybody? How many times when you go to the grocery store or go to an office or stop at the library or visit your doctor's office or go to a PTA meeting or sit around with your friends playing a bridge or poker or go to a bar, how many times does the discussion turn to war in Afghanistan? Right. Never. You know, unless you're sitting around with somebody and, you know, you're both peaceniks and you're going, oh, man, what are we doing? There's no discussion about what's going on. And why is that? Because somebody else is handling it. 0.1% of American families, I don't know. I don't know what the number is. Pick a number. Have to deal with this. Is it 1%? 0.5% have to wait for the phone call or the email or the visit from the chaplain, the military chaplain, and a junior officer to come up to the door and give the parents the bad news or the spouse, you know, the husband or the wife. Huh? This is crazy. Why are we involved in a war in Afghanistan? Seriously, why? Nobody has taken me up on that, huh? Nobody wants to. You got an answer? I don't have an answer. I can't think of a reason. Can you? That we're in Afghanistan? Except that's where corporate America insists that we be. Corporate America wants us there. Capitalism wants us there. Enormous problem for Obama. The statements, leaked statements by General Stanley McChrystal. So what's Obama going to do now? See, this gives the right-wing noise machine time to crank up. The Beck, if he hasn't committed suicide yet. Limbaugh, if he's not completely freaked out and fried on drugs again. Hannity, if he can take time off from the Bunny Ranch, which I'm sure he can. But all these people now are going to aim their guns at Obama and start the pressure.
Well, I'll tell you what Obama's going to do. He's going to pull our troops out. That means that everybody that's fought over there and died has died for nothing. God damn it, we're going to let that happen?
You know that's coming. That's the reason this stuff was leaked to the Washington Post. And it's always interesting to me how willing the Washington Post in the past decade has been to be a conduit for right-wing machinations and attempts to thwart what would otherwise be public opinion. Washington Post has just become an absolute mouth. Might as well be the Washington Times. There's very little difference in their editorial policy. Now they've got some writers there who are not of this ilk, but the Post itself is a warmongering tool of outlet of corporate America. War, give me war, give me death, give me destruction, give me empire, even though we have no more business doing empire right now than we have in hanging ourselves, which, in a sense, is what we're doing with this, right? Anyway, it might as well be William Westmoreland. For those of you of a certain age, you remember William Westmoreland, the psychotic son of a bitch, he's dead now, who sent... We'll never know how many Americans and Vietnamese and Laotians and Cambodians to an early grave. William Westmoreland, four-star general. Ouch, that hurt. So General Stanley McChrystal is the new incarnation of William Westmoreland. And we'll talk about that when we come back, if I can get my hearing back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
against right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. So you can make the argument that the war lovers, like General McChrystal, General Petraeus, and the war cowards, like every Republican in a leadership position in this country, they have got Obama painted into a corner now. What is he supposed to do? What is he supposed to do? Well, you know what he's going to do, and I think he would have done it anyway. I think painting him into a corner was just extra insurance by the corporate welfare state, for whom Obama is turning out to be nothing more, nothing less than a tool. But McChrystal, in his report to the president, says emphatically, according to the Washington Post, quote, failure to gain the initiative and reverse insurgent momentum in the near term, the next 12 months, risks an outcome where defeating the insurgency is no longer possible, end quote. Wouldn't you think that William McChrystal, General McChrystal, or Stanley McChrystal, would be smart enough to know, as a military strategist and tactician, to understand that what he is proposing is impossible? If it is an insurgency, which, let's stipulate, it's an insurgency in Afghanistan. So bringing in another 20,000 troops, or 40,000, raising the U.S. total there to what? That would put us around 100,000, will do nothing. At one time, we had over 500,000 troops in Vietnam. And the Vietnamese still defeated us. At one point, didn't the Russians have about 300,000, or was it more than that, troops in Afghanistan? The Soviet Union, for God's sake, and the Afghan forces defeated them. Doesn't, if McChrystal himself identifies this as an insurgency, why am I bringing this up? Aren't these guys much smarter in military strategies and tactics than you and I would ever hope to be, because we are not military professionals? But don't you and I have the history of this country over the past 40 years to look back at and say, well, wait a second. In the insurgencies always succeed against an invader. You can call it an insurgency if you want to. You can call it a revolution, a counter-revolution, a resistance force. Call it whatever you want to. But doesn't it always defeat the invader in the long term? And in the short term, doesn't it perpetrate such death and destruction and pain and suffering on the invader that the original goal becomes lost in this web and morass of rage and fury and frustration and pain? Chris Hedges, writing in a different context at Truth Dig, writes the following. Listen to this. Violence is a dark undercurrent of American history. It is exacerbated by war and economic decline. Violence is spreading outward from the killing fields in Iraq and Afghanistan to slowly tear apart individuals, families, and communities. There is no immunity. The longer the wars continue, the longer the members of our working class are transformed by corporate overlords into serfs, the more violence will dominate the landscape. The slide into chaos in a police state will become inevitable. The soldiers and Marines who return from Iraq and Afghanistan are often traumatized and then shipped back a few months later to be traumatized again. This was less frequent in Vietnam. Veterans, when they get out, search for the usual escape, the escape routes of alienation, addictions, and medication. But there is also the escape route of violence. We risk creating a homegrown Freikorps. The demobilized German soldiers from World War I, who violently tore down the edifice of the Weimar Republic and helped open the way to Nazism. The Afghanistan and Iraq wars have unloaded hundreds of thousands of combat troops suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder or major depression back into society. According to a joint Veterans Affairs Department, University of San Francisco study published in July, 418,000 of the roughly 2 million service members who have fought in or supported the war suffer from PTSD. As of August 2008, the latest data available, about 250,000 military veterans were imprisoned on any given day, about 10% of the total daily imprisoned population. There are 223,000 veterans in jail or prison cells on an average day and an unknown number among the 4 million Americans on probation. They don't have much to look forward to upon release. And if any of these incarcerated vets do not have PTSD when they're arrested, our correction system will probably rectify that deficiency. Throw in the cocktail of unemployment, powerlessness, depression, alienation, anger, alcohol, and drugs, and you create thousands, if not tens of thousands, who will seek out violence the way an addict seeks out a bag of heroin. Son of a bitch. Why are we not stopping this? I mean, this is being done in our name, right? It's American soldiers, the American flag, American armaments, American death, American destruction, American killing, American prisons, American trucks, American gasoline, American bullets and bombs, American missiles. I mean, why are we doing this? Why are you and I allowing this to happen? I don't get that. You know what I do? I just block it out. I don't even think about it. Until our military affairs correspondent, Sharon, sends me, like she sent me today, 3 or 4 articles, boom, 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 boom. And I start reading them and go, holy Christ. So, anyway, the Washington Post says McChrystal's assessment that has now been leaked to the Washington Post, you see, is one of several options the White House is considering. McChrystal's plan could intensify a national debate in which leading Democratic lawmakers have expressed reluctance about committing more troops to an increasingly unpopular war. Obama said last week that he will not decide whether to send more troops until he has, quote, absolute clarity about what the strategy is going to be, end quote. Well, Mr. President, your top two commanders, McChrystal and Petraeus, have given you the strategy. Now you know what it's going to be. More troops, more death, more destruction, more war. To do what McChrystal claims has to be done with tens of thousands of more soldiers, defeating an insurgency. General McChrystal, I've never even been in the military. But I know that you're as crazy as a loon. And how do I know that? Because I can sit down with a history textbook and take a look at insurgencies, whether it's ours or ones that we've tried to suppress, and just look at the history of it. It doesn't work. What are we going to do? Are we going to have another bug out from Vietnam after like we did in Vietnam? Is that what we're going to have? We've already overthrown the government of Afghanistan. I'm not speaking in favor of crazy religious freak bastards like the Afghan mullahs or whatever the hell they are, Taliban. I have no use for them. I wish they would all just choke to death like I wish sometimes Limbaugh would. But I don't want to send American military personnel into somebody else's insanity. If they want to live like that, Jesus Christ, they've lived like that for 6,000 years. What are we going to do? Oh, we're going to bring them democracy. No, we're not. We're not there to bring them democracy. We're there to figure out a way to steal the resources or access so that we can steal the resources in Kazakhstan and Tajikistan and Berserkistan and Crazystan and give me shelterestan and bring it all across Afghanistan. We've already overthrown the government. We put in a puppet, Hamid Karzai, who is one of the most corrupt leaders, quote, quote, on earth. Smiley son of a bitch. Every time you remember when Bush had him show up for State of the Union speeches, where Bush would look up in the gallery and there would be Hamid Karzai sitting there in his funky Afghan outfit, and Bush would look up, hi, there he is, a real freedom fighter. And Karzai sitting there going, Jesus Christ, you Americans are stupid. And thank goodness you are. So we've got a puppet government. We have a country that is just absolutely a failed state. The only place there's any form of government, and this is arguable, is Kabul, is in the capital. The rest of the country is what? According to McChrystal, it's sunk into chaos, insurgency, blood, disorder, drugs, opium poppies, yada, yada, yada. It's a failed state. We're going to go in there and do what? Dedicate the next 10, 15, 20 years to building what? McChrystal's assessment offers an unsparing critique of the failings of the Afghan government, contending that official corruption is as much of a threat as the insurgency. Well, if that's the case, what are we doing there? What are we doing there?
I don't believe my eyes.
Because liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. So you see what the trap that's been set for Obama. Without being the least bit condescending or patronizing toward my betters, Barack Obama is a naif where it concerns real politic in the international sphere. People who have been setting U.S. military slash foreign policy for the past 40 years run circles around Obama. They eat Obama for breakfast and then again for lunch and pick their teeth with his toenails before they go to bed. Obama doesn't have a chance against these people. He really doesn't. And now you have Petraeus and McChrystal, who have Obama, in effect, surrounded. McChrystal warns that in the short run, quote, it is realistic to expect that Afghan and coalition casualties will increase, end quote. Translation, we are going to kill more American boys and probably a few American girls in this godforsaken place. Godforsaken because why are we there? We should not be there, should we? So McChrystal proposes speeding the growth of, here we go. For those of you over a certain age, this is going to sound very familiar. McChrystal proposes speeding the growth of Afghan security forces. The existing goal is to expand the Afghan army from 92,000 to 134,000 by December 2011. McChrystal seeks to move that deadline back to October of 2010. Overall, McChrystal wants the Afghan army to grow to 240,000 and the police to 160,000 for a total security force of 400,000, but he does not specify when those numbers could be reached. He also calls for what he defines as, quote, radically more integrated and partnered, end quote, work with Afghan units. Oh, my God. The term for this in the late 60s, early 70s was Vietnamization. And here we are again. The right-wing media now will pick up on the points in McChrystal's report that had been leaked to the Washington Post. And that is that Obama must. He has no choice now because his field commanders have said, especially McChrystal, not that Petraeus is a field commander. He's not. He's the CENTCOM chief now. He is, in effect, McChrystal's boss. But his chief field commander, the supreme commander of allied forces, including U.S. forces in Afghanistan, is going to ask for 40,000 more American soldiers. Now, how does that translate? If the studies indicate that 35% of American soldiers are coming back from these horrors with PTSD, of that 40,000, what does that mean? Another 16,000 mentally wounded American young people are going to return. How many are going to come back with half their heads blown off and their arms and their legs? How many more are going to come back in coffins? And what? For what? Seriously, for what? For what? But Obama now is in a box. He's stuck. Because he has said he would make up his mind after he saw all the information, and that means, of course, when you're a war president, that means listening to your commanders, see what your commanders have to say, and then make your decision. Because after all, Barack Obama is the new commander-in-chief, right? So what is Obama going to do now? Now that parts of McChrystal's report have been leaked to the Washington Post and put out, not leaked, but handed to them. So that they could get this out, because the Washington Post loves war. Oh, my God, the Washington Post, as long as somebody else is fighting and dying. So what is Obama going to do now? Because it's out there. Obama is going to have to take a stand that will put him in direct opposition to all these right-wing, cowardly sons of bitches who populate right-wing radio and television. Cowards, scum, swine, you know who I mean, from O'Reilly to Beck to Limbaugh to Hannity, all these guys. And some of the female crazy people on the hard right, Ann Coulter and Crazy Eyes Malkin and the rest of these people. So now the drumbeat will begin. You see, it is relentless against Obama. Obama should not be president. Obama's in the White House. It's not the Black House, it's the White House. What's Obama doing there? So now it'll be this issue. So how do you think Obama is going to decide? What is President Obama going to say? Well, listen, I've read the report and from my field commander, and I've read the assessments, and I'll decide to go ahead and send another 40,000 troops. Now, remember, Obama has already sent 21,000 more. Wait, wasn't 21,000? Another 21,000? So now McChrystal wants another 40. To these guys, these military people, it's all strategy and tactics. It has nothing to do with human lives. Ask anybody who served in Vietnam. I have 15 correspondents who emailed me on a regular basis, all of whom are combat veterans. And every one of them will email me the same thing. In their own individual styles. This is crazy. This is madness. We've done this. We've been defeated. We're going to do it again, aren't we? We're going to do it again. We're going to do it again over and over and over until finally the United States completely, totally collapses. this is the Malloy program. We're coming to your phone calls here in just a second. It's 7 past the hour. The Washington Post, tomorrow's edition, is out now online. And further reports on McChrystal and our war in Afghanistan. According to the Post, McChrystal has told his commanders to pull forces out of sparsely populated areas where U.S. troops have fought bloody battles with the Taliban for several years now and focus the troops on protecting major Afghan population centers. So this is a retreat. It can be spun any way that one wants to spin it. But this is very similar to what happened at certain stages of the war in Vietnam. And it is a sure sign that the battle already is lost if somebody, the fight of American military in Afghanistan was lost the day that the first troops went in there because there was no mission. The lie was that they were, we'd sent troops to go after the people who had engineered the attack on this country on September 11th. And Osama bin Laden, I thought it was Sheikh Khalid Mohammed who was the mastermind. I don't know why we're after Osama bin Laden. I guess because he's a smartass who wanders around with a Kalashnikov and a long robe and, a Saudi hat on his head. I don't know. I have no idea. Do you? Of course you don't. So, McChrystal, if you look at what his orders have been in the past 24 hours, apparently, according to the Washington Post, then this is a retreat. Call it strategic withdrawal, call it a different tactic. This is the first sign that U.S. forces are defeated. Now, that is not a surprise. Oh, we could defeat whomever we wanted to in Afghanistan, but we would have to kill everything that moves. I mean, the same way it was in Vietnam, same way it was in the Philippines, in the Spanish-American War. If we kill everything that moves, then we win. It's very simple. If anything that is capable of carrying a weapon remains alive, then we haven't won. Because as long as there is someone alive in Afghanistan who can carry a weapon, and there are military U.S. military personnel to take shots at, the shots will be taken. The bombs will be planted. The IEDs will be put together, and the American soldiers will be coming home wounded, shocked, dead. Bob in Kentucky writes regarding war. That's the subject line. Bob writes, I watched Kay Bailey Hutchinson on Hardball tonight. She looked like the living dead as she spouted out the reasons we are in Afghanistan. Al-Qaeda, Taliban, we must be the ones to take the upper hand in the global war against terror, blah, blah, blah. There's no military reason to be there. The Taliban is bad, but the guy we are supposedly looking for is in Pakistan, holed up in some cave. So I guess we drop drone bombs, controlled, by the way, by pilots in Las Vegas, hoping we might get lucky. And as far as a draft goes, it would never happen. All the 20-somethings who think they know about the world will suddenly find their asses on the line, just like we did in Nam, and a choice will have to be made. Is this war worth my life, or is Canada nice this time of year? The whole idea of war has become too sanitized, and we seem to be getting used to having a continual war in some part of the world, and we put up with it because it doesn't really affect us. As sick as that is, I see us going there. It doesn't really affect us. If the draft wherever reinstated, protests would finally abound after people figure out what they're going to go do and what they're going to. All the yuppie Fs would be running for the hills or protesting. Maybe the draft is a good idea. We'll see. I don't think it'll happen. I really don't. That's not how corporate America works. That's not how they work. Let's do some phone calls here. Doug is driving in Arkansas, listening on XM. Hey, Doug.
Hey, how you doing? I'm enjoying the show.
Well, thanks. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. You asked a lot of questions last hour or so that I've been listening, and I don't know how many of them are rhetorical or how many you really want to know the answers. I don't claim to be the oracle or anything, but I know the answers to some of them.
Well, let's hear it. I'm always looking for answers, Doug.
Well, you know, the strategy has been, just as you said, the Taliban were giving haven to the Al-Qaeda people. And the strategy over the past 6 or 8 years since we've been there has been to keep them from using Afghanistan as a training area, a training base. And that doesn't take very many troops. And so that was President Bush's people's strategy. And so we didn't have very many troops there, and we could control the countryside, at least as far as keeping them from operating training facilities mm-hmm. to send out terrorists in the world. Now, President Obama, I don't like very much he does domestically, but I think he's got it right on, at least on military policy and overall on foreign policy. The strategy is changing, and you pick up a few nuances from things he says. He says he wants to review the strategy before he commits more troops. The strategy has been changing from denying the area as a Al-Qaeda haven to pacifying the country, pacifying the populace, and doing what we did in Iraq, which was basically turn everything back over to the Iraqis. I spent 18 months in Iraq, got home in December, and saw that work and was part of the surge and all of that. So that's maybe as an opening. I don't know what else you might like to know.
Are you suggesting then that the policy that the U.S. government, whether it is Bush or Obama, that the policy in Obama is a success or succeeding?
Well, it has for the time being, which is basically deny the area for use by Al Qaeda.
But
in the long term, you know, we either got to stay there or pacify it, so the strategy is changing.
Okay, but General McChrystal has come out and said to the troops, we're pulling out, we're bugging out, we're pulling into the cities.
Right.
Is that not a retreat? Is that not an admission of defeat? There's no way, Doug, don't you agree? There is no way, unless we want to send, and even this wouldn't work, if we want to send 500,000 troops into Afghanistan, we sent 500,000 troops into Vietnam. What happened there?
Well, you know, there's a book out, and I can't remember the guy that wrote it. The first one he wrote was called The Fiasco. The second one was called The Gamble. Ricks, as I believe, is his last name. Recent copyright. The strategy in Iraq changed from chasing down bad guys to protecting the populace. So when he says pull out of unpopulated areas and pull into populated areas, that looks like that they're adopting General Petraeus's playbook, which is what we used in Iraq in 2007.
Okay, but not all right. Not to be. I'm not trying to come across as a smartass
sure.
here. But you said
no, you're not.
You said that the policy was to deny these alleged training camps where terrorists could operate and then travel out into the world and do their destruction. The terrorist camps, the terrorist training camps, are not in the cities.
No, they're out in the countryside.
Okay, so if we're abandoning the countryside, are we not abandoning any effort to stop the terrorist training camps, assuming
switched,
that they actually
words.
Exist? I'm sorry?
You said abandon. You switched words. You said abandon the areas where there are no populace. You can control those areas with predators and air power and, you know, bomb the crap out of people that are setting up training camps. But you can't bomb the crap out of a bunch of civilians up near the towns and the villages.
But that's exactly what we're doing. I mean, just 2 weeks ago, we wiped out, 90 civilians in a raid?
Yeah, there's been some screw-ups, and no doubt about that.
Well, we call it screw-ups. They call it murder. And
sure.
I think, I just, Doug, I appreciate you checking in. I appreciate your insights, because you obviously have been in, like you said, you've been in Iraq. But I don't think our situation in Iraq is one where we can sit back and say, well, we won. I don't think we won at all. I think the oil companies won. They got what they wanted. But the U.S. Foreign policy didn't win. There's no democracy in Iraq. And as far as Afghanistan is concerned, somebody told me that Afghanistan is the Pashto word for Vietnam, I think. Doug, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in.
gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. A couple of quick emails here, then back to your calls. This is from Bill in Ottawa, Canada. Hi, Mike. Glad to see you're pushing back on Afghanistan. This insane war must be stopped. It's interesting to know that the Russians are now, quote, supporting, end quote, the Afghan mission by allowing Hannibal Obama to transit their territory with supplies for the troops. I'm sure the Russians will continue to support, quote, quote, the mission any way that they can, struggling, of course, to keep a straight face until the Yanks leave the room so they can laugh their freaking heads off at the fools. There was a report today in the Ottawa Citizen from a Canadian soldier who has witnessed young boys being raped at knife point by Afghan police and soldiers. He said that this common practice is ignored by higher-ups. In fact, they have actively suppressed such reports in the past. Mustn't muddy the waters. It's all about Al-Qaeda. No one talks about schools and hospitals anymore. The problem is that Obama says that we are there to stop Al-Qaeda or the devil or something, not to prevent the rape of children. It's important to establish your priorities. By the way, the Taliban fully support any and all surges. Really, they do. They say it just gives them more targets and further alienates the locals. America has impaled itself on some of the highest mountains in the world. Afghanistan won't be your Vietnam. Afghanistan will be your Afghanistan. And from Tony, the only way, Mike, the only way for us to end this war is to lose our president. By that I mean he must pull us completely out of Afghanistan immediately, which will, in the end, result in his death. Shall we say military-industrial complex? We all know what President Obama's fate would be should he go against their wishes. How noble a thing it would be if he chose to put his own life on the line for the sake of our military men and women. Of course, we all know that no such thing will ever happen. The endless war continues. Tony. In Virginia? Yeah, I think in Virginia. Well, back to your phone calls. Steve is in Austin, Texas, listening on XM. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hope you and yours are well and high ground.
Well, yeah, there's an awful lot of water around here.
Yeah. Well, that last email was sobering. It kind of knocked me back a step.
I hear you. Me too. I mean,
The Vietnam analogy continues to grow when we see the video of these little goat trails through the mountains on mm-hmm. the border between Afghanistan and Pakistan.
Right.
Simply draw in a lush jungle forest, and you've got
sure.
the trails that we were carpet bombing. Not only into North Vietnam, but into Cambodia. Oh, what surprise!
Mm-hmm.
An illegal war in a third country. Oops.
Well, in place of Laos or in place of Cambodia, just put in the word Pakistan.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
We've seen this movie. We've been here.
Oh God, yeah.
We've had so many American soldiers and Vietnamese or Afghan or Pakistani civilians butchered because of what? I mean, if somebody could give me a really good idea or a really good cause, if this were a cause, if this were just, you know, there is the theory of just war, that I think the so-called insurgency in Afghanistan is fighting a just war. I think the Vietnamese were fighting a just war.
Yep.
Their countries had been invaded.
Yep.
Their people were being slaughtered.
Yep.
So their resistance was a just war. Our invasion, how is this a just war?
Mm-hmm.
It's madness.
Yep. And not to after Tony's email, I'm not so reticent, but not to be too harsh, but, you know, for Robert McNamara and for General Westmoreland, you know, may they continue to roast in their conception of hell.
I hear you.
I had a roommate back in the 70s who was fresh out of airborne, and was in the Cu Chi area in Vietnam, and also did a few excursions into Cambodia.
Mm-hmm.
And what it did to him was, pure torture.
Yeah.
And he lapsed into the bottle and, was pretty much lost to everybody. And I, God, it's happening again. I'm seeing one-legged veterans or one-legged people, and they're purporting to be veterans, and I believe most of them,
mm-hmm.
On street corner after street corner after street corner. And they're way too young to be Vietnam veterans.
It's insane, Steve. And I just wonder, that old line from the song, "Where have all the flowers gone?" That line that says, "When will they ever learn?" And you got to wonder sometimes, don't you? Steve, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Is brought to you by It's Up to Us Alone, featuring Ed Asner. Go to usalone.com for info on where to hear the debut of this dramatic new radio play in your area. Before the hour, we are talking about this report. Authored supposedly by Stanley McChrystal, the Allied commander and the commander of U.S. forces in Afghanistan, a report that was conveniently leaked to the Washington Post with a request going out from the Department of Defense not to reveal everything in the report until such time as the president might want to reveal it. That's what the I think the Post article itself says, but enough was revealed to put Barack Obama in the position of having to do what his two commanders, Petraeus and McChrystal, insist, and that is more troops, more death, more destruction in an area of the world where empires go to die. That's the standard line. That's where empires go to die. And, of course, you can make the case very adroitly that the United States is a zombie empire. We don't produce things anymore. We're in debt up to our eyeballs. The only thing that we do continue to produce and we continue to lead the world in is the production and exportation of weaponry, of items of destruction, death, chaos, murder, mayhem, blood, guts, sadness. That's what we do. Man. I can just hear the right wingers out there right now listening to this program. Why don't you get the goddamn hell out of the country, you son of a bitch? Well, I probably should. So should probably about 250 million of us. But nah, that's usually not the way it works, is it? Huh? Jeffrey is in New York City listening online. Hey, Jeffrey.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Terrific. Thank you. I agree with basically everything that you said about Afghanistan, except one sort of minor detail. When the Russians went in there, they actually did conquer Afghanistan and install a communist government over there led by Najibullah. It was the United States that supported the so-called Al-Qaeda insurgents that toppled the Soviet puppet government over there in the continuing war that the U.S. had with the Soviet Union, these proxy wars that it fought all over the globe.
Well, I don't disagree with that, but the bottom line is it ended the Soviet Empire.
Yes, it did.
So the means to that ending, one can make the argument that the Soviet Empire didn't end in Hungary. It didn't end in Czechoslovakia. It didn't end in Poland. All those countries where it did send in troops and send in puppet governments. But it was Afghanistan. Now, granted, the U.S. Created the Mujahideen and provided them with, what was it, Stinger missiles. And
yeah.
There's a movie. I don't know if you've ever seen it. Have you ever seen the movie called The Tank?
No.
I recommend that. It's written, it's all in English, it's an American production, but it's written from the perspective of a tank unit, a tank commander, and the four or five people in his squad who run this Russian tank. And they're caught in Afghanistan as that war is ending. And if you ever get a chance to see The Tank, I think you'll find it one of the most incredible movies you've ever seen. And
I'll
it's,
check it out.
I'm not sure if it's shot in Afghanistan or Pakistan, wherever it was shot, but,
yeah.
It looks like Afghanistan. And I agree with you that, the United States, had it not been for the United States, I think the Soviet Union would have lasted probably a little bit longer than they did, but eventually they would have been defeated. Nobody can defeat an insurgency when you invade their country. It can't be done.
Right. This is the problem that that the U.S. seems to have. They seem to have this love affair with inserting themselves into the affairs of all sorts of nations around the world. There is no threat to the United States. No nation is going to storm our borders, arrive at our shores, take over our country. It's just totally impossible.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is an entire kind of like fake Defense Department that goes around, who knows what they're doing, like stuffing their pockets, I suppose, ultimately. But there hasn't been a real, even the Cold War with the Soviet Union was a bunch of BS.
Mm-hmm.
We've been just following this crazy militarism for just totally made up, bizarre reasons, false flag operations and everything.
Yeah, and I would think that at some point, and I don't know historically how often this has happened, but at some point a society matures to the extent that they understand that war, no matter how many wars that they might appear to win, they are undermining the fabric of their own society. They are undermining their own empire. They are setting themselves up for ultimate, not just defeat, but disappearance. And I don't understand why countries don't get that. Thanks, Jeffrey. I got to move on. I appreciate what you said. Dee is in New York City. Hi, Dee.
Oh, hi, Mike. How are you? I'm on radio. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, hear you fine.
Hi. It is an honor to speak to you. I am a proud subscriber. I've listened to you since Air America days.
Well, thanks. Thanks. I appreciate it.
I am a Republican, and after listening to you, I've come to the point where I'm going to switch parties. I think I'm going to become an independent. I'm 47. I've been a Republican since I was 18, and I always felt that I'm African American, and I always felt like it's the party of Lincoln, and I read about Roosevelt and Theodore Roosevelt because he was a Republican and he was a progressive. And it's just, when I see the party now, it's just been, it's the kind of thing that I keep saying. I always tell people, I bet you that Lincoln and Roosevelt's been in their graves. If they came back, they would have been kicked out. The party's just a mess.
Sure. Even somebody as crazy as Richard Nixon would have been kicked out at this point.
Exactly.
The current configuration of the Republican Party makes Nixon look like a liberal.
It makes him look like a saint.
Yeah.
And not
quite that far. But
well, compared to Bush, sometimes I wonder. But, I really just wanted to just take a moment to say, I guess it took several years. And there are some things, you make me laugh sometimes, but you really make me think. And I realize now that the party, I don't understand the Republican Party and the Democrats, it's like they don't have a spine and you get frustrated. And, I think maybe being an independent for me might be the best thing for me to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I the other thing I wanted to say is that I hope people will subscribe. I think it's important. I believe that you're a patriot. I know you don't like to hear when people say, oh, you're great, you're this, but you really are, because you don't hold anything back. You basically tell it like it is. And, you know, that's something that I appreciate.
Well, thanks.
Very much.
Well, thanks,
very
Dee. That's very kind of you to say that. Thank you very much.
I just have one other thing. This weekend I saw a movie with Andy Griffin. It was called The Face in the Crowd. It came out in 1957. And I kept thinking about Glenn Beck. And I kept thinking about the Southerners that, you know, like, there's, like, parts of the movies where these people are just, like, sheep. And I'm wondering, it just reminded me a lot of Glenn Beck. And I don't know if you've ever seen the movie.
Yes.
But I wanted to get your take on it, because it sounds like the same thing. It's like, and I wonder if Glenn Beck, when the camera's off, if he says, boy, these people are really stupid, and they just follow anything, and if I can keep them scared.
Well, in the movie you're talking about, the Andy Griffith character, I don't think was insane. Glenn Beck is insane. And, mm-hmm. and there's a difference. I think... I think the Andy Griffith character just got absorbed and taken over by his celebrityness or the power. But I don't know what goes on in Beck's mind. I'm sure it's just worms and maggots and all kinds of things squirreling around inside of his head, eating him alive. Hey, thanks, Dee. I got to move on. Thanks. I appreciate what you had to say. Very interesting. Thank you very much. A couple of people emailed me. The movie is not The Tank. It's The Beast, or The Beast of War. That's the movie I'm talking about, because some of you sent me links to the plot summary and the people that were in it. That's the movie. I thought it was The Tank. Okay, you can stop now. My God, how many you guys are? I had no idea that everybody had seen that movie, The Beast. So, or The Beast of War. And The Beast, I guess, refers to the tank. I don't know. But it's worth seeing. If you get a chance to get that DVD and watch it, it's a gripping film. I don't know what it came out in the 80s, I guess. I don't know if it won any awards or yada, yada, yada. But it's an incredible film. We have to take a break here. Yeah, we have a break coming up. So we'll just hold off for a second. You got any music? Go ahead. Play some music. Give me an extra 7 seconds here. Go ahead. Do, 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 do. Ha! We'll be right back. To the subject matter tonight, Bruce Enberg, Kate Petrini, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf. Our executive producer and engineer is Kathy Bay. Charlie is in San Antonio, Texas, listening on Sirius. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
This endless war the emailer mentioned a little bit ago, I think that's at the base of it. I mean, they give us all these political reasons for the war, but the war is endless, and it's all about the profit. There's no better money-making machine. And all you got to do is take the population, dumb them down, make them angry in their poverty, and then make them afraid of some group of people that they can't understand and have a different color skin, and, mm-hmm. and you've got the perfect money-making machine.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. It's about the money.
Endless war, endless profit. It's amazing that we as a people, and I'm talking about everybody in the country, hasn't figured that out yet, what you just said, that this is not about patriotism. This is not about defending the Constitution or protecting the homeland or making sure that mom and apple pie and the flag are remain sacrosanct. This is about going out and killing and dying and being wounded and injured and psychologically destroyed for profit. Why haven't we figured that out and refused to participate?
Well, you know, so often I guess they whip us all up with patriotism and wave the flag and you know they indoctrinate us from the time we're kids. And as a matter of fact, you had an ex Iraqi vet call in, and it was like he was too close to it. He saw what he was doing there, what they told him he was doing there.
Mm-hmm.
But when you step back, I'm a veteran also from the Vietnam era.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, yeah, I believed it, you know, but I don't anymore. And then it's been a long time since I have.
Yeah.
But again, it's, you know, if you step back and take a good look at it, it's all about the money. And there's plenty of money for, you know, to be made on both sides.
Yeah.
And making money on both sides of the equation. So.
Oh, yeah. The military-industrial complex in this country rolls in the wealth of war and death and destruction. And the bad guys on the other side, which would be our puppet, Hamid Karzai, and the people we're supposed to be fighting against, they all make money too. Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. Thanks, Charlie. Appreciate what you had to say. I'm hung up on the image of former General Colin Powell in Hanoi 10 years ago. Dancing on a stage, dressed up like some stereotypical, ridiculous version of a Polynesian dancer, with coconut breasts on his chest and a grass skirt and lipstick on his face, and for some kind of a conference that was there, and the last day everybody's supposed to do skits. So there's former general of the United States Army, former chairman of the Joint Chiefs, future Secretary of State, dancing around on a goddamn stage in Hanoi. And I remember saying at the time, I guess it wasn't 10 years ago, was it, Kathy? It's probably more like about six or seven. And I remember saying at the time, you know, there are 58,000 dead Americans who never, I mean, that's not what they died for. But then when you stop and think about it, yeah, that's exactly what they died for. They just didn't know it. They just didn't realize it, that they were dying so that years later, in fact, a generation later, Colin Powell and a bunch of American trade representatives could get up on a stage in some theater in Hanoi and make total asses of themselves so that corporate America could make more money. Son of a bitch. I mean, how does that not... I mean, that just infuriates me. I can hardly think about that thought. Jody is in Eugene, Oregon, listening on Sirius. Hi, Jody.
Hi, how are you?
I'm all right.
I've been listening to you for a little while, and it's the first time I called. I just had a question for you.
Sure.
I don't know what Blue Dog Democrat exactly means.
Well, it's a takeoff. Here in the South, there's the term Yellow Dog Democrat. A Yellow Dog Democrat was a Democrat that would vote for a yellow dog if it were a Democrat. In other words, a Yellow Dog Democrat would vote for anybody who's a member of the Democratic Party, down to and including, or up to and including, a dog, a yellow dog. Blue Dog Democrat is a more conservative Democrat, a person who belongs in the Republican Party, but they maintain their status in the Democratic Party, usually because they've gotten some power by being elected and reelected several times. But Blue Dog just means it's a Democrat who is not going to go along with the Democratic Party platform. Unless they're somehow threatened or blackmailed or browbeat into it.
Oh, okay. Well, that's kind of what I got from what I've heard, but I just wanted to get specifics just because, you know, I didn't know if they, like, kind of snuck their way in there so that the Democrats were able to get things passed that they wanted to have passed and things like that.
No, because the Blue Dog Democrat will, more often than not, vote against the Democratic Party. I would think that Max Baucus, the guy who ostensibly has assisted in writing the Senate version of the health care package, he's a Blue Dog Democrat. Which they're not all Southerners. The term Yellow Dog Democrat is a Southern term, but Blue Dog Democrat can be anyone who claims to be a Democrat, but they don't go along with the party structure. As a matter of fact, they're more inclined to the Republican point of view. Thanks, Jody. Hey, thanks for hanging out tonight. I do appreciate it. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care, okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.